Thanks, Willie. I'd like to thank Willie and Shaw for the invitation to come and be part of the presentation group here. Before I start, I'll also respond quickly back to Michael. I'll still say pretty much the same. I do remember a little bit more oats, but I was too young to have access to nice GIS and satellite imagery to look at the crop diversity, but a lot of corn and beans, maybe because I was in fact a kid after Haber-Bosch was invented and also after the horses had been retired and the mules. So not quite as distinguished and as you might think, but anyway, okay, thanks. So this will also be a little bit of a break from too much data, a little bit more kind of conceptual, but I think there's a lot of points here in what we're trying to do in terms of developing tools to help producers and land managers manage nitrogen. Really ties into really all the earlier talks that Michelle and Michael and others have given. So as I think all of us know, you know, nitrogen is really a major management lever in agriculture, and that's really everywhere, right? So here's a paper that Jerry Hatfield published about 10 years ago, and it shows, you know, you can't quite, who took the, here it is. Yeah, so if you look at whether it's Australia or China, the United States, South America, you know, the 60s to 2000, basically, you know, yeah, we know that, right? Total fertilizer use, total grain production is a straight line. So it's a huge management lever. And if we look at sort of historic crop yield increases, how much of that can be attributed to Haber-Bosch and nitrogen additions? You know, it doesn't matter really almost what crop you look at or what part of the world. You know, somewhere 50 to 60% of that yield increase is driven by that, you know, increase of nitrogen use. And if you look at it from the farmer's standpoint, in terms of their average rate of return for nitrogen use, you know, 3 to 6% again across countries and different crops. Data from IPNI, these long-term averages. So that really means something that is surely not a surprise to anyone, is that farmers are highly risk averse. They are afraid of using too little N, okay? And this, I think, was what Michelle was saying too. Even organic farmers that are maybe thinking more about sustainability and things like this, it's a tricky business for them. So it's hard to, you know, to get changes. But we know that our current end use patterns in agriculture are causing environmental damage. Okay, and there's been discussion of this earlier in the session. You know, with the eutrophication, whether it's in the Gulf Coast, Chesapeake Bay, Lake Erie, is well known and is in the newspaper. And Michael was talking about, yeah, Supreme Court decision coming up. Des Moines Water Board versus all the water districts there about the nitrate in the groundwater. So it's, you know, we all know this. It's a real issue. And if we look at nitrous oxide, we know is accounting for about 7 to 8% of the total radiative forcing effect of anthropogenic greenhouse gases. Nitrification is increasing. Most of nitrous oxide emissions, and most of the emissions, somewhere around 80% of N2O emissions globally are from agriculture. Okay, and soil management is the dominant part of that. Manure management in developing countries, biomass burning is a big source. But this is, you know, work that David Ray put together in Nature Climate Change, just really showing the trend. So nitrous oxide is a really important greenhouse gas. We've got both the water quality, we've got the nitrous oxide, etc. So if we want to address these environmental problems and understanding the importance of nitrogen to the farmers and this risk aversion, we have to think about, okay, what are the ways to incentivize farmers to begin to moderate their practices? Obviously, if you have more efficient end use, you can have cost savings, and that's an incentive. But, you know, is that enough? And certainly a lot of the models that are being developed in different tools, AdaptN and others, are kind of, you know, targeting these things to, you know, have cost savings to the farmer. But I would say that probably we also need to be looking at other kinds of incentives, and that might be anywhere from government programs, you know, ecosystem service markets that target, could be either water quality, Chesapeake Bay, nutrient trading kinds of things, greenhouse gases, or you know, I think in the future both. And then on the demand side, there's been discussions here at this meeting, and increasingly there are more and more producers of agricultural products that are looking at marketing their products as more sustainable. So, you know, they have a lower environmental footprint, less greenhouse gases, less water quality. So we really need to look at other ways to incentivize producers, you know, to change their practices, and these are some different ways to do it. And so all those things are going on, but I would say that for any of these policies, a real critical point, and this is where I think science comes in, is they need reliable metrics, okay? So that means that we need to be able to quantify and verify our emission reductions, whether that be greenhouse gas emissions, whether that be nitrate leaching, et cetera. And we know in agriculture that's a difficult job, okay? These emissions, these losses of nitrogen, they're dispersed, they're non-point source, so they're spatially and temporally variable. We've seen some of that in the data slides that have been shown earlier. The rates that control these processes are complex. There's many interacting processes. And to go out and measure, Michael is out there mixing soil cores and doing isotope dilution, and other folks are doing difficult measurements in the field. That's what we do. That's a research environment task, okay? But if we're looking to do direct measurements on the farm to verify changes in nitrogen losses, N2O emissions, you know, we're not going to have the capability to do that routinely as part of a nitrogen mitigation project. Okay, so it's really a research activity to do this. And I promised Lars Bergstrom that I had a picture of him and his magic lysimeter machine here, found off the web. So, but whether you're looking at gas fluxes stuff, you know, this is what we do. But the farmers aren't going to do that, so we've got to have good, sound, model-based approaches to do the quantification that will drive, the implementation of these mitigation projects, if you will. And that's really where some of the work that my group is doing comes in. We've got a system called Comet Farm, which really looks primarily right now at greenhouse gases, and here's a kind of a cartoon, if you will, of the greenhouse gas emissions from agricultural sources. What's significant about Comet Farm Tool is that it's a full within farm gate greenhouse gas accounting. So it not only looks at crop systems, pastures, but also the livestock, energy, forestry, agroforestry, and it implements the 2014 USDA entity scale greenhouse gas method. So it's got a kind of a standardization that's applied to it. It's got a fully spatial interface with high resolution climate, soil, and land cover layers. And it's got a number of, so it's really a platform. It's got databases, it's got spatial information, and it's got a number of models for each of the source categories, including both process-based models, in this case the Descent model, as well as several empirical models. And it's also open access, it's on the web. So producers can use it, you guys can use it. You can send your students here if you want them to. I've got business student classes that are doing supply chain analysis, senior projects, and they're coming in there. They're using Comet Farm. So it's out there. It's available. Just Google Comet Farm and you'll find it. So we'd be happy to have you. And it's free. Okay, so I want to give you a little bit of an idea of how Comet Farm has, you know, some of the management controls on N Dynamics. And so if you look at cropping systems, then you can look at both fertilizer additions as well as organic amendments. Can be manure, compost, and the kinds of management variables that you can change include the amount, the timing, the type, the application method for fertilizer addition. You can use enhanced efficiency products such as slow release fertilizers or fertilizer that has nitrification inhibitors. There are other parts of the system though that you know influence the nitrogen dynamics that you're going to predict. The crops, obviously the crops you grow, but also some of those can, you know, you can choose legumes, you can incorporate cover crops, other management activities that affect nitrogen dynamics can include the tillage, irrigation, residue burning, and we also, as I mentioned before, have livestock systems here, so things like what feed and forage you choose, protein contents, nitrogen, the manure production, manure management system. So all those things are elements in the model that influence nitrogen dynamics. And so just a kind of a quick example to give you, this isn't an experiment, but to just give you a flavor of the tool if you go in, how you might set it up for a particular example. I'm not quite sure why I picked Clarion, Iowa, but you know, maybe I had Michael you know, echoing in my brain or something. And just, you know, let's say we had a baseline, so I, you know, just for simplicity, yeah, here we are, we got corn, soybeans, we must be in Iowa. We've got intensive tillage and spring applied urea, could be urea, ammonium nitrate, whatever. And say we've got some silage corn too, intensive till, and we've got some livestock, so I don't know if there's, you know, it seems like a small dairy, but I didn't want to put in a whole lot of numbers, so I said a 500 head dairy. And I've got a scrape flush anaerobic lagoon type manure management system. Now I want to use a tool and say, okay, let's look at different mitigation strategies. And I, you know, you can do really as many as you want, but, you know, to keep something simple, okay, let's change the tillage, let's reduce the nitrogen rate and use a slow release fertilizer along with that. Let's add some cover crops, reduce till, and then over here on the livestock, let's look at different ways to adjust the manure management system. So when you go into this tool, it's designed for almost anyone to use. If I've got seniors in the business school and they can actually make this thing go, I think probably most other folks can. And if they can't, then they can talk to Matt Sturmer, who's back there in the audience, and he'll lead you through. So once you go in and you say, okay, here's my source categories, I want to do cropland, and you know, I want to do forest or energy, whatever else I might want to do, and then you can go in and you can say, here's my farm, and I can designate the fields. This uses USDA's web soil survey, so it subdivides the fields into all the different soil map units and does separate calculations and aggregates those. You would go in and define your crop system, so you've got, and this is actually brand new in the last week or so, we've got a nice utility, a drag and drop system, so it just takes you a few seconds to sort of construct a crop rotation there, and then you can refine your management details. On the livestock side, I find a little bit more complex, but you basically select your livestock types, you know, describe your animal herd characteristics, your feed, housing, etc. So once you've entered all that data, then you have the opportunity to generate reports. The way this looks is you know, both tables and graphics, and you can have multiple different scenarios here that you can compare and get the differentials in terms of the greenhouse gas emission differences between those, both for cropland, for livestock, etc. Another thing you can do is you can also download the data into spreadsheets and pour it into other kinds of analysis tools. So this is a system that's up. It's being used right now for greenhouse gas management, but in general sort of sustainability management, both by NRCS. We've got some companies, Ben & Jerry's is working with this to look at their dairy supply chain, for example. But it's also a little bit of a work in progress, and we've got some near-term developments that are important. We've got a new application program interface, which is going to allow the system to interface with other kinds of tools. And I think, you know, for this group here, really it's important. I'm going to be getting a hold of both Michelle and I think Michael here and saying, please send us your data sets because, you know, we're really interested now in organic amendments and cover crops and trying to improve the underlying models that are supporting this because ultimately, you know, the systems are really only as good as the models. We've got a new NIFA project that Megan Schapansky is leading, where we're really looking at sort of organic production systems. And over time, you know, these USDA guidelines are being updated and new methods are being developed. And then finally, one of the things that I think is pretty critical, particularly with the use of manure and compost and things like this, is really two issues. And one is right now, so we've got a full farm system, but we don't do a full end balance tracking in the sense that the farmer is specifying the amount of manure or organic amendments they're making, but we don't directly connect that necessarily with what they're reporting on the livestock side, because there we're actually calculating manure production and things like this. So one of the things we're going to be doing in the near term is kind of connecting that end balance so that we and accounting for the possibility of import or export of manure and compost. And then that also has a really important effect on really the full LCA calculation, right? Because if we're looking at something like greenhouse gas mitigation, if you import a bunch of manure or compost from somewhere else, you add it to your soil, well, surprise, your soil organic matter is going to go up, but you know, can you count that as greenhouse gas mitigation? Well, you can't unless you can do really a full LCA calculation that looks at the full boundary of that system. So that's one of the challenges. That's one of the areas that we're working on here in the, you know, really right now. So I guess in the end, I would say that this is, one of different kinds of systems that are being developed to try to help producers, help others, manage their systems and can we get better quantification that will allow farmers to participate in things like ecosystem service markets, et cetera. But ultimately, you know, the success of this is going to depend on this group, right? All of us and the research we do and how well we can really understand the systems and the ways that can be improved. Okay, so thanks, and I'll take any questions.
So this is my perspective, and I come from the Urban Soils Division and Urban Soils Materials. There would be a really cool application of this or sidearm of this to do an application for urban residuals that would be really pertinent for municipal managers, and it would be a gift.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks to hear. Yeah, we actually, you know, we're currently working on a sort of a turf grass component to this, and that could be really extended to sort of an urban, an urban open space kind of a thing, in the sense that, you know, one of the nice things is we also, you know, we have trees and we have biomass here, so you could be looking at golf courses or parks or really urban forest stuff. So we're working on the urban part. It's not up and going yet, but we definitely have plans to do that.
One of the best things about models is that they can be independently validated.
Right.
how do you, when is the right time to begin validating common funds? Because you're obviously collecting a very diverse amount of data, and there's pieces that are going to be changing for years to come.
Who
should be doing that?
That's a great question. So some of it, you know, Comet Farm is really kind of the platform. So it's got, you know, it's the data, it's the inputs, it's the GUI, it's the underlying models. I think it's the, you know, so it's really a multifaceted question in some sense. We, you know, certainly on the models that we've developed, you know, either our research group, but more broadly with this, you know, this 2014 USDA guidelines, part of that whole process was a group of scientists, almost like a sort of an IPCC process, where you had academic, government, industry scientists. They got together. They, you know, they came up with a consensus set of methods. And you know, as those methods are being, you know, are being updated, and you know, there's the validation, if you will, of the emission models. That's an ongoing scientific activity, and really, in a sense, it's the working groups associated with this USDA guidelines that are doing that. And then there's other things like, you know, there are other uncertainty issues of, you know, soil characteristics. Well, you've got surgo soils. How good are those characteristics? You know, is it? It says it's a silt loam here. Is it really a silt loam? Well, you know, there's uncertainty about that, and I guess NRCS and the Soil Survey Lab is trying to continue and improve their processes. So it's kind of a communal thing. And one of the things that we are, I would say, we're a little bit lagging on, but certainly in the plans, is developing more uncertainty estimates for the numbers that these tools do generate. And we actually had a breakfast meeting this morning, and I had a symposium yesterday, and one of the guest speakers, Steve Hamburg from Environmental Defense, was kind of castigating a little bit the soil science community, saying you guys need to do more validation, you need to do more model comparisons across the way. So we're, you know, I think it's an ongoing process, but it's a real important one, as you say.
So, certainly greenhouse gas emissions are critical. However, in our current economic environment, they are an externalized cost.
Yeah.
Maybe in the wake of Paris, we will see some value associated with it, but that's still off in the future. The reality is that agronomic decisions are based on yield, on profitability, cost of inputs, cost of price of product. So are you considering, have you been working on linking this with cropping systems models and economic models in order to optimize profitability and hopefully also within that current profitability minimize greenhouse gas?
No, that's a great question. I hope you're a reviewer on our NEPA proposal that's being submitted in a week or so. One of the things that we want to do actually is as you suggest, try to build out the economic side of these things. Because you're right. I mean, you can have decision support tools that suggest, well, try this, try that. But for sure, if you have tools that can, you know, help the farmer make the decision considering the economics. Okay, yeah, the model says do this, you'll reduce your greenhouse gases. Well, there's uncertainty about that, but, you know, if that's going to cost a lot or if there's going to be a big yield penalty, then you want people to know, well, yeah, you could do this, but, your rye cover crop, for example, and not changing your nitrogen fertilizer, looking at I think that was Michelle's data, you know, pretty big yield decline. So I think that's an important part that needs to go, you know, needs to continue to be developed here in terms of advising producers. Phil?
It seems to me the boundary conditions on these calculations are really important. And in some cases, it may not be as appropriately applied. In other cases, for example, in the USDA greenhouse quantification, to a nitrogen fertilizer manufacturer, it's not credited to the farmer.
That's right.
To produce nitrogen fertilizer use doesn't actually result in the full credit that really ought to be provided. Is there a way, are you thinking about ways to relax the boundaries or define the boundaries?
So what, that's a good point, because the tool is really designed as sort of an inventory tool, right? And an inventory tool doesn't look at things like embodied emissions or something that you do at an LCA, because in an inventory sense, if you do that, you're going to risk double counting sources somehow. So it really is a within farm gate inventory system. But the beauty of the beauty of really good software designers that took computer science courses and stay in the basement in the building next door is that you can build applications that, so Comet Farm can stay a nice, clean inventory calculator, but you can build plugins and wrappers and things like this that can take those, those basic calculations and use them as life cycle inventory inputs to another kind of a system that is, attached to that, but is a separate entity that can do your LCA, that you can change your boundaries. So we don't need to, you guys that are on the working groups for the, for the inventory methods can keep doing your thing with that fairly clearly defined boundaries, but yet that utility can be transformed into a broader application that looks at different boundary conditions and LCAs, and that's very much on the table. And we really need to have something if we're going to do these life cycle assessment supply chain kinds of applications, because just the straight within farm gate estimates don't, they don't tell the whole story.